The trick to an evening like this, Cora had long believed, was to come at it like an airbender. Indirectly, with careful, gentle redirections, rather than a sort of relentless eyes-on-the-prize charge to the main objective. Subtlety had never really been her strong suit, but as a friend of hers who was long on practical wisdom and short on tact had once put it, even the dumbest animal eventually learns not to stick its nose in a fire. In this case, it was no great hardship, since she was gathering general information of the kind that would naturally come up in friendly conversation anyway. All she had to do was be exactly what, on one level, she was. A girl from out of town, looking to make some new friends and have a good time, and the rest would take care of itself. So she did make some new friends, and she did have a good time, but in the process she also learned more about the way life worked in the city, as perceived by people who were actually living it. About the so-called Immortals Club she had heard supposedly ran the place, Mike and his friends didn't know a lot. They were not, perhaps, the most politically aware kids in town. Mike, as she already knew, was studying to be a civil engineer and working for the Customs and Immigration Bureau. Rafik was a budding fashion and costume designer with a self-confessed vintage bent, which partly explained why he so coveted her jacket, and Gisela was studying to be an industrial chemist. None of them was particularly interested in the top-level governmental workings of the Republic of Zeta Cygni or its capital city. The place ran smoothly, the bureaucracy didn't go out of its way to bust your chops, you weren't very likely to get stabbed on the subway, and the Federation Charter of Basic Sapient Rights was observed more scrupulously than it tended to be by the Federation itself. Generally speaking, if the cops kicked down your door in this town, it needed kicking down. What more could a person ask for, particularly so soon after the corporate war? Cora picked all that up over the course of 6 hours at 4 different nightclubs, punctuated in the middle by a fantastic stand-up dinner of mysterious meat rolled up in a bread product at a street cafe. Some part of her wondered whether that dish was some sort of pan-cultural universal feature, like she had once read that the word "huh?" was. It took her a while to develop a taste for the local standard in club music, a bit thumpier than she was used to, with giant fistfuls of sawtooth waveforms, but she had to admit it was eminently danceable, and she was in a mood to dance. So were Mike and his friends, and they were all quite good at it. The hours melted away into a blur of exhilaration and camaraderie. Even though she was technically working, Cora figured she hadn't had this much fun in years. Not much of a drinker at her most abandoned, she paced herself carefully, avoiding the appearance of priggishness without getting more than pleasantly high. By midnight, the others were a bit further along, but none so much as to become obnoxious, and she was still enjoying the evening immensely as she sat in a corner booth at a club called High Res and caught her breath after a particularly fast-paced number. This far from the dance floor, it was just about possible to carry on a conversation without having to shout at the top of one's voice. Slipping into the booth next to her with a tall glass of something neon orange, Gisela was able to make herself heard without difficulty. "So, Mike," she said, gesturing with her chin to the young man in question, who was just disappearing into a short corridor with a glowing "Restrooms" hollow sign above it, "says he met you at work?" Cora nodded. "Yep. I came in on a freight run from Zipang the other day, and he was on the customs desk." "You're on a freighter crew?" "No, I was just a passenger," Cora said. "It's cheaper than the commercial lines." She grinned. "And usually more interesting." Gisela looked like she didn't quite know what to make of that, then said, "Oh, so what do you do?" Ah, the eternal question. Cora found it hard enough to answer when she wasn't undercover, as it were. When she was, it always gave her considerable pause. What did she do? "I'm a roaming agent of metaphysical balance" sounded crazy to normal people, and a lot of not normal people come to that. "I'm an engineer," she said. "Civil." Gisela looked interested. "Oh yeah? That's what Mike's training to be." Cora nodded. "Yeah, he told me. It's a noble profession." "What do you build?" Gisela asked. "Oh, transportation infrastructure, mostly," Cora replied. "Bridges and such. It's not very exciting, but I like it." Gisela snorted. "Well, you've definitely built one to Mike," she said without rancor. Cora gave her a puzzled look. "Pardon?" "Sorry, I think I'm drunk," said Gisela. "But it's obvious he's totally into you." Giving Cora a frank look, she asked, "Are you going to put him out of his misery?" Hadn't planned on it." Gisela smirked sardonically and raised her drink in a toast. "Well, good luck if you decide to." She rolled her eyes. "I've been trying for 2 years and he keeps ducking me. I don't want to endanger our friendship. You know what's endangering our friendship? My frustration level." She frowned. "Sorry. Why am I telling you this?" She shook her head. "I'm such a dork." "No worries," said Cora, adding sympathetically, "Believe me, I've been there. Not fun." "I was thinking of trying again tonight," Gisela went candidly on. "But, well, then you came along." She blinked in surprise at her own words, then blurted, "Wow, sorry. Did that come across all bitchamatic or what?" Shaking her head, she raised her glass in ironic salute again and said, "I just mean I know when I'm outclassed, that's all." "No, listen," said Cora seriously. She leaned closer and looked the blonde in the eye, pitching her voice more privately. "Gisela, honestly, I'm not after anything like that. I came out to dance and talk and have fun tonight, and that's all. Promise. Mike's a good guy. I think he's a lot of fun, but I'm not looking for love. Especially not the temporary kind." Gisela contemplated her for a few seconds, then said, "Huh. I think I believe you." "I hope you do, because it's the truth." "Well, in that case, what do you think I should do?" Cora had to suppress a snort as she thought, "Someone's asking me for relationship advice?" Somewhere, Asami just spat an entire cup of tea on somebody. Then she smiled and said, "Well, keeping in mind that I don't really know you guys very well, or any of your backstory, I'd go for it. Maybe it works out and maybe it doesn't, but at least you tried. And if you're the right kind of friends and it doesn't, you'll survive." The smile became a wry grin. "And laugh about it later." Gisela considered the matter gravely for a few moments, swirling the ice around in her drink as she gazed thoughtfully down into the glass, then looked up at Cora with a little smile of her own. "That's so crazy, it just might work," she said. Then, more seriously, she added, "Thanks. I'll think about it. I really will. Thanks for caring." Cora grinned less wryly. "You're welcome," she said. Then, rising, she excused herself and headed for the restroom hallway. As luck would have it, she met Mike as he was coming out. The music was louder here, so she leaned closer to him and said, "I think Gisela's had enough. Where's Rafik?" "Still dancing," Mike replied. "Pretty sure he's ready to call it a night any time the rest of us want, though. How about you?" They moved out of the way of a man in a dark suit, bound for the restroom corridor himself, and Cora said, I could stand to start winding down, I think. Maybe get something else to eat? Someplace a little quieter? Mike nodded. Works for me. I'll go round up Rafik and Gisela. Okay, be right out. Mike went out into the club again. Cora, heading down the corridor, saw that there were several doors on either side before the T leading to the restrooms at the end. The man who had passed her and Mike was entering one of them as she went by. Cora paid him little attention, but something about him tickled an instinct at the back of her head. She put it aside and continued on her way. Coming back from the bathroom a minute or so later, she saw the same man emerge from that room and make his way outside. A moment later, another person, younger, paler, with slicked back blonde hair, all but lunged out of the same door, nearly colliding with Cora. She pulled up short, and he recoiled with a soft, startled cry. "Whoa, easy there," said Cora. "You want to watch yourself pulling into traffic like that," she added with a grin. The guy didn't seem to think it was funny. Without a word, he turned and all but fled. Well, that was weird, thought Cora, and then she put it out of her mind and went to join the others. They ate a late-night dinner at a Seleucian restaurant that seemed to specialize in chucking-out-time, sobering-up food, then went their separate ways at the inn with professions of friendship and goodwill, proclaiming it a great night out. As the three friends walked off up Avenue Queen Sheva toward their lodgings, Cora saw Gisela take Mike's arm and lean against him, pretending, she was fairly sure, to be drunker and or more tired than she really was. Good luck, kid, she thought with a smile, and then descended to catch a train downtown. Sunday, June 23rd. With a mumbled groan, Cora slowly opened her eyes to regard the digital clock on the nightstand. 10:35 a.m. No, 10:36 now, according to the glowing digits. Spirits, how late was I out last night? Cora wondered as she tried to extract herself from the tangled-up bedsheets. She hadn't had a night like that for several years now, at least since the current crop of air kids had come of age and started their air nomad sojourns, and their friends in Republic City had grown up and entered the workforce. Cora sighed and sat up, rubbing the sleep from her eyes. For nearly a century now, she and mornings had maintained a tentative détente, but it was times like these that made her return to her original opinion. The morning is evil. Grumbling, the Avatar finally pulled herself out of bed, staggered to the dresser and the hotel coffee maker thereupon, and set the machine brewing with the complimentary bottle of water that had been left in the room the afternoon before. With that process started, she retired to the bathroom to perform her morning ablutions. A half hour later, refreshed, dressed, and fortified with the hotel's admittedly decent coffee, Cora considered her plans for the day. Something she had seen the night before was triggering warnings in the back of her head, the same sorts of warnings she got when she visited the seedier sides of Republic City, or Caldera City, or Ba Sing Se, in the execution of her duties. But she couldn't consciously remember what it was. She just had the hard-to-define sense that something was stirring in New Avalon, something unpleasant. She couldn't pull what it had actually been out of her memory yet, though. And even if she could, until she gained more information and evidence, her usefulness as an information source to the police would be non-existent. Here, she didn't have a century's worth of experience and exposure as the Avatar to add weight to her testimony. It would all be on her for the burden of proof. In a way, it was invigorating. Complacency had doomed many an Avatar in their time, and had almost doomed her own self more than once. With the galaxy developing as it was, Cora couldn't afford to take chances like that anymore. Still, there was something to be said for a century plus of experience, and thanks to her week in New Avalon so far, she knew exactly where to look. Cora's afternoon was spent, once again, in the press archive room at the central branch of the Avalon County Public Library. Ensconced in a study carol, she dove into the past decade's news reports on the city's criminal element and the emergency services' eternal task of protecting its citizens from harm. In short order, Cora came to two conclusions. The first one was rather encouraging, that the government of New Avalon had spared no expense to get the best and brightest of the galaxy's law enforcement communities to set up shop in the city of the Sphere. From Police Commissioner James Gordon, headhunted from the rough-and-ready streets of Gotham on Kane's World, to the head super cop, Detective Inspector P.C. Hammer, all the way down to the beat cops like Schweikart and Ragnarsson, they were wholly invested in their duty to their city and proud to be a part of the machinery that kept the city safe. A far cry from the early days of the RCPD, Cora reflected ruefully to herself. Basing a police force on the force of personality of a few police chiefs may have kept their closest members in line, but it rapidly broke down once the strong-arm tactics were removed or shown to be powerless. A bitter pill to swallow, but one she had come to realize in the studies leading to her master's thesis, that the Beifengs hadn't been as ideal for that job as they had hoped. She had to give them credit for trying, at least, but it had taken several house cleanings, some would say purges, to get Metalbender Central's house in order. The second conclusion was much more worrisome. Much like Republic City before it, New Avalon's status as an open port was a double-edged sword. The relatively free immigration and visiting protocols, as well as the sheer size of the Zeta Cygni Dyson Sphere, made it hard to screen for those of ill intent. And the sheer scope of the city itself meant there were far too many places for people to fall through the cracks. Their social services appeared to be doing better, on average, than most of those in the galaxy, and certainly better than many back home. But even one person lost to the streets was one too many, in her opinion. It was nowhere near the worst she had ever seen. She knew well that in a city this size, particularly one that was a major port, the line between liberty and anarchy was a fine one. Maintaining such a city on the right side of it, so that it was safe for decent people without stifling them under police state tyranny in the process, was a damn difficult job. That the people responsible for doing it here in New Avalon seemed to be adept at walking that line, and, moreover, specifically committed to doing so, was a very hopeful sign to Cora. It hit her suddenly, while she was eating dinner in the bistro across from the library, what she had seen and where. She closed her eyes and replayed the mental tape, concentrating on pulling out as much detail as possible. Club Hi-Rez, at the end of the evening, when she went to the bathroom. The man entering the side room, coming out again. The twitchy guy following, nearly running into Cora, then all but fleeing. Weird, but why was it setting off her mental alarms? The man entering the side room. Tall, thin, nondescript, middle-aged. Middle-aged? In a club where virtually no one was over 25? Except me, she thought wryly, but I digress. Tall, thin, nondescript, middle-aged, carrying a black leather briefcase. Coming out again. Tall, thin, nondescript, middle-aged, carrying one of those silver metal briefcases. Ah. The twitchy guy following, nearly running into Cora, then all but fleeing, with a black leather briefcase. A switch, she murmured under her breath. The man at the next table over eyed her warily, then rattled his newspaper, and pointedly immersed himself in the sports scores. It was with a new resolve that Cora returned to her hotel room to change clothes. She kept her jeans, sleeveless top, and boots, but pulled on the jacket from her prior night at Hi-Rez for urban camouflage. Thus attired, she headed for the club proper. The club was less packed than it had been the night before. Cora assumed it was most likely due to the following morning being a workday, There was still a sizable population among which she could mingle, so mingle she did, passing in orbits around the dance floor, the seating areas, the full-service bar, and the DJ station. She casually chatted up anybody who was willing to talk, gathering information and serving as a lure to whoever actually ran the place. She tried talking to the two DJs, but since they hadn't seemed to register her presence when she came up, waved to them, and asked how they were doing, she had put the attempts on hold after the third try. There was something unsettling about the chrome and gold helmets the two men wore, though the digital LEDs blinking through their visors were cheerful enough. At least, she hoped those were helmets and they were men. Spirits, for all she knew, they were some sort of newfangled disc jockey robots. As the night progressed, Cora learned several interesting tidbits from the die-hard partiers and the club's waitstaff. The club itself had been founded 8 years ago, during the initial waves of settlement, while inner-city floor space was still relatively cheap. It mostly served the 20 to 30, or non-human equivalent, age range, though there were some outlying variances in that spread, and plenty of non-alcoholic drinks were stocked for the few cartable patrons who managed to get in when attending in groups or by invite. The club occasionally rented out parts of the seating area for large parties of young urban professionals and the occasional electro-gaming group. The manager paid the staff competitively and did his damnedest to keep the riffraff out, a fact corroborated by the mostly unobtrusive bouncers of various species that kept watch on the crowd from the periphery. This could be a problem, Cora mused to herself. She wasn't looking for a fight tonight if she could help it, but life for the Avatar was never easy, and she factored in their presence as she continued her meandering through high-res. Hopefully, the management's desire to prevent harm to its patrons and the historical artifacts preserved in large illuminated display cases would keep things from escalating. She dwelled on this for a bit as she stood in front of the case for one such artifact, which was doubling as a seating divider due to its placement and size. It consisted of two tall rectangular columns, wider than they were deep, connected at the base, as well as a much smaller wood-sided console that was covered in buttons and lights in neat rows, secured within its own case. A curious device was adjacent to the console, containing what looked to Cora like a spool of mover film. The whole machine looked simultaneously out of place, yet timelessly industrial. The whole machine looked simultaneously out of place, yet timelessly industrial. The exposed relays and wires for memory and arithmetic control logic easily visible. The sight brought a twinge of nostalgia to the Avatar's heart, since she'd been present for Dicho's own computational revolution. She stood there, letting memories traipse across her mind, tuning out the thumping bass of the background music. As she leaned closer to get a better look at the relays used, a figure stepped over and addressed her. "Ah, I see you have an appreciation for the classics," the male voice said with an amused tone. Cora made a wordless, questioning sound and blinked, straightening back up. "I'm sorry?" "The Zeus Z3, said the man with a grin and a wide gesture with a white cane to the machine in the display case. "Earth's first fully functional programmable computer. A replica, sadly, but still fully functional. This is the one built for the Deutsches Museum in Munich back in the 1960s, if you can believe it. Cost quite a pretty credit to get it here, too," he continued with a mischievous twinkle in his shining eyes. Cora took this all in and made a low whistle of appreciation as she sized up the newcomer. He was clad all in white, from the tips of his shoes to the slacks and curiously long-tailed jacket he wore, to the white bowler hat atop his slicked-back graying hair. There was a subtle sheen to his clothes and hair, the source of which she couldn't easily identify. "Ah, but I'm forgetting myself," he went on, an apologetic smile on his lips as he gathered himself up. "I'm Michel Dufresne, your host. provider of any and all entertainments and diversions, at your service. With that, he sketched an ornate bow which ended up involving both his cane and his bowler hat, the latter rolling down his arm to his outstretched hand. Cora couldn't help but briefly applaud at his performance, as did several of the nearby patrons. "Thank you, you're too kind," he said as he straightened up and replaced his hat upon his head, tucking his cane under his arm. "And who might you be, my dear?" "Cora," she smoothly replied. "Cora Mizuzoku." "Charmed," said the owner of the club, though to her relief he didn't make as if he wanted to kiss her hand or anything. This was fortunate, as she suddenly had a realization, putting together something said to her early in the evening. "Oh, you're the man they call Zeus." Dufresne's expression brightened. "Ah, you've heard of me?" "Well, that's what your bartender calls you," Cora said as she jerked a thumb over her shoulder towards the bar. "I was wondering why, actually, but I suspect this right here is part of the answer," she continued, nodding towards the ancient computer in its display case. Zeus chuckled. "Ha, ah, that's a pretty tale, my dear Cora." He gestured towards one of the booths that ringed the periphery of the seating area. "If I may offer to share a drink or two with you while I tell it? On the house, of course." Cora smiled and checked her watch. "Can it be fresh water? It's getting late, and I want to make sure I can make my way back to the inn without getting lost." The owner nodded agreeably. "All right. Shaddix, a round of the Crystal Alpine, if you would." He directed towards the bartender on duty, before escorting Cora to his personal booth. The next half hour passed in a reasonably pleasant fashion for Cora. Zeus appeared to be a gracious host, quite rightly proud of the niche he had carved into New Avalon's nightlife with his dance club. With his mix of high-power electronic house music and his collection of antique computing equipment, not only from Earth, but from Seleucia and Vulcan as well, Hi-Rez had become one of the youth culture nexuses of the growing city. As you can imagine, resolving such a dispute between members of the Vulcan immigrants and Romulan expatriate community here was something of a conundrum, the club owner expounded as he gestured with his own flute of water. The Surikite Vulcans didn't want to admit that the refugees were better poets and dancers than they were, and the Romulans just couldn't conceive of the idea that Vulcans, Surikite or charismatic, would have a better grasp of the basics of rock and roll. Cora nodded, to show she was paying attention, as she idly swirled the water in her glass. It was the second glass she had imbibed that night, and while Zeus had poured his own drink from the same bottle, she wasn't taking any chances. Discreetly separating the water in a beverage from whatever else might be in there was basic waterbender in the city stuff, a technique she often found herself teaching her younger cousins when they came to Republic City for the first time. "How do you get them to stand down?" she inquired with an arched eyebrow. Zeus curled his lips in a sly grin, his eyes twinkling at Cora over the rim of his glass. "Challenge them to a dance-off with an all-Vulcan rock band." Cora's other eyebrow joined the first one in the raised position. "Seriously?" Zeus laughed. "Ha ha! Indeed!" He then straightened, leaning forward. "The talent is there, if you know where to look. One of them was even a local boy from one of our fine city's high schools. I think the five of them will go far, once they get their act settled." "Well, good for them," Cora smiled. "So, how'd it all turn out?" "Oh, with a minimum of bloodshed, fortunately," Zeus said coyly. "The Vulcan team tried to make it best 7 out of 13, while the Romulan leader tried to sign the band up for a recording contract. Never mind, he wasn't a record exec in the first place. They were just that good." "Wow, I wish I could have seen that," Cora said with a grin. Oh, video of that night's easy enough to find. Again, if you know where to look. Zeus replied, refilling Cora's glass and his own with more of the bottled snowmelt water. The video streaming services have their own copies, of course, but they're rather raw and haphazard from the source material, people's mobile comm cameras, optic recordings, things like that. Cora's focus intensified, even as she thanked the club owner for the refill. Over the past hour, the club's population had slowly decreased. This late at night, the only people remaining were the diehards, who were in their own little worlds, and the service staff. She had a feeling, honed by long experience, that she was coming to the real nub of the evening now, one way or the other. Mind you, I do know a few people that I could get you in touch with, if you'd be interested, he continued with a questioning eyebrow. Thanks, but I don't have anything to play it on, she apologized, then amended, at least not right now. Zeus tilted his head, apparently in thought. Well, that's not a hard problem to solve in a city like this. If you don't want to invest in the legwork yourself, I could make some arrangements for you to meet with them on some neutral ground, like... Like the rooms in the back? Cora interjected, watching his reaction carefully. Zeus stilled and set his glass aside on the table between them. Yes, precisely. His eyes narrowed slightly. And I wonder why you bring them up. She made an apologetic shrug and gave her best embarrassed grin, one that had been passed down from avatar to avatar through the centuries. Well, I happened to be in the club last night, and I bumped into a couple of people on the way back from the bathroom. One in particular was a little freaked out for whatever reason. I thought maybe it'd be possible to send a note to them to apologize. The club owner tapped his fingertips together as he leaned back in his booth seat, the very picture of nonchalant ennui. But the avatar easily noticed how his eyes flicked from side to side, reflections of the rest of the club and his pupils before returning his focus to her. I've made it my business not to pry into the business of others who use them, my dear Miss Bizuzoku. In fact, those who do often find the experience distressing. But you must have some idea, Cora continued to press. Certainly I have some idea. In fact, I have many ideas. I pride myself on being an idea man, so to speak, Zeus expounded, becoming more animated, gesturing widely. I had the idea of this club, a haven for those nocturnal recreation seekers with more refined and modern sensibilities. He picked up his cane and waved the curved end vaguely toward the inhabitants of the rest of the club. I had the idea that there would be those in this city who would value highly an establishment with a certain reputation for genteel discretion. I had the idea that those who don't appreciate such discretion might require a demonstration of its value, and selected my support staff accordingly. He gave Cora a thin smile, his eyes flashing beneath the brim of his bowler hat. And right now, I have the idea that either you're not here in any official capacity, or you're so far outside your jurisdiction that it makes no practical difference. You're a guest in our fair city, Cora Mizuzoku of Zipang, and you're behaving most awkwardly. You're looking for facts? Very well. Here is one. Zeus leaned forward over the table, his prior urbane facade falling like a cheap mask, his eyes meeting Cora's as he enunciated, "Tourists shouldn't stick their noses in." Despite herself, Cora felt a little thrill course through her body. While she honestly had come here without the intent to resort to violence, she could practically smell it in the air as her ears picked up the sound of men on the move behind her, and on some level she welcomed it. Through a long and difficult process, she had learned the value and the beauty of not starting fights, but she would never be able to say that she didn't love to finish them. To do so would be to deny one of the essential elements of herself. Still, she was the Avatar, and so she felt duty-bound to make one last attempt at resolving things peacefully. Jinora would be disappointed if she didn't at least make the gesture, however futile she might know it to be. "Look, I've had a nice night in your club. Two of them, actually. Last night was one for the book. And you've really been a great host, Mr. Dufresne," Cora said, gesturing with her free hand toward the club owner. "Seriously, I mean it. I don't want to end things on a sour note tonight. So I'll make you a deal. If you just tell me who used that room last night, I'll get out of your hair and not come back. No one will ever know where I got the information. All right?" she offered. "Believe it or not, I really don't want to cause any trouble here." Zeus stood up from his seat, cane in hand, looking down at Cora from across the table. His expression told Cora everything about what he thought about her offer. "I'm afraid it's rather too late for that, Miss Mizuzoku." Still seated, Cora glanced again at the nearly full glass in her hand. She could see parts of the club behind her, reflected off the surfaces of the glass and the water within it, as well as the two bouncers who were now directly behind her to either side. "Yeah, you're probably right about that," she admitted, and took a final, unconcerned sip from her glass. Zeus glanced over Cora's right shoulder. A moment later, a heavy hand came down upon it. "Yep," Cora thought. "Here we go." The first thing Cora did was to fling the contents of her water glass back into the bouncer's face behind and to the right of her. For anybody else, this would have resulted in achieving little more than a wet and irate bouncer. But thanks to Cora's subtle waterbending, the flung water maintained its cohesion and hit the man in the face with the force of a heavy fist. With a startled grunt, the first bouncer staggered back, both from the force of the blow and the fact that the water was not falling away from his face like it was supposed to. This gave Cora enough space to shove herself back, her chair shooting out of the way as she pivoted to throw her now empty glass towards the face of the second bouncer. He threw his hands up to prevent getting a face full of broken glass, as she expected he would, which left him unprepared to defend against the leg sweep she then performed, knocking him off his feet. The immediate threats dealt with for the moment, she backed up and turned to face the club proper, all her senses open to size up the environment and her opposition. About 10 humans and alien types of that particular breed of person who favored direct force over subtlety, already closing on her position from all directions. Over by the entrance at the far side of the club, she could see a knot of patrons trying to make for the egress with all due haste, along with some of the waitstaff. Interestingly, a few other security people were helping with the evacuation, which was a point in Hi-Rez's favor. This didn't mean Cora would go any easier on the security staff, but she did appreciate it. It meant she wouldn't need to worry so much about getting innocents caught in the crossfire should she need to break out the overt bending. Given the look of things, Cora doubted she'd have that much trouble. With a quick jump to a tabletop and a hurdle over the nearest seating divider, she planted herself in the middle of the dance floor, easily evading the two humans who had tried to take advantage of her momentary pause. Now well situated, Cora allowed herself a thin smile as she widened her stance, her fists up and ready for action. What followed was a virtuoso display of martial ability on the part of the Avatar, not that the bouncers and thugs were in a position to really appreciate it. She shifted between movement styles like the water that was her native element, dodging like an airbender before lashing out with fists and feet that would be the pride of any firebender worth their flame. She held her ground like an earthbender when it was appropriate, but flowed like a waterbender when it was advantageous to do so, deflecting her current opponent's attack and often sending it careening into one of the others. On top of that, she added the various skills she had learned from her worldly travels and her cadre of friends over the years. The evasion and stunning techniques of the Kyoshi warriors, plus the bare-knuckles brawling favored by non-benders in the back alleys of Ba Sing Se and Republic City, seemed to work just fine regardless of the species of her opponent. Absently, Cora noticed that the two DJs had not left their station once the fight had started. In fact, they seemed to have queued up some more music to go with the violence she was dealing out. She tossed them a jaunty wave in thanks before proceeding to introduce number 5's chin to number 7's knee. Across the distance of the club, Zeus watched the goings-on with a critical and souring eye. The girl was good, make no mistake, but such a display was not doing any wonders for his bottom line. The incidental damage from all the thrown bodies alone would cost him a pretty credit, and the medical bills for his personnel didn't bear thinking about. His establishment covered all reasonable medical expenses, but this was pushing it. The only bright spot in the whole affair so far was the fact that the investment he had made in transparasteel display cases was paying itself back with interest, as Miss Mizuzoku flung one of his guards into the case containing a Seleucian SRT-08 with a resounding whong, but no harm to the equipment. Still, a man had to consider his reputation. If this kept up, it could negatively impact the public's perception of high-res in more than one fashion. He caught the eye of and gave a quick nod to one of the bouncers who had helped escort the customers who didn't want to hang around, and was answered with a returned nod and a significant pat of the side of his jacket. Thus reassured that the matter would be handled, Zeus shifted his focus away from the scene briefly. He had to make some calls. Cora missed the brief interplay between the owner and his staff. She was too busy dealing with more pressing matters, like how to avoid getting her face slammed into one of the display cases by one of the bouncers. She avoided this fate with a quick twist of the torso and waist, shifting momentum to cause the bouncer to meet the transparent material instead. This still left her in a good position to appreciate the equipment inside, something called a Shikar cognitive engine, as she followed up the reversal with several quick punches of her own. Her attempt to finish off the woman was interrupted by a reflection caught in the glass behind them, a flashing arc of metal that was headed towards them at rather high speed. Her protective instincts overriding all other priorities, she hauled the woman by her jacket lapels to the side, barely avoiding the oncoming blade as they fell to the floor. Some part of her was shocked that the display case was pierced, not shattered, by the blade, but the rest of her was too pissed off at the moment to care about the structural integrity of advanced transparent metals. "Hey, watch it!" Cora and the bouncer exclaimed at the same time, then looked at each other in surprise. The avatar didn't allow the woman to get a fourth word in, as she hauled off and headbutted her, putting the bouncer out of the fight. With her out of the way, she could now aim her focus on the blade-wielding opponent, who was just now wrenching his knife out of the case with a metallic squealing sound. "Seriously? Is this how you treat your co-workers?" Cora asked as she jumped to her feet, dodging out of the way of another knife swipe. Whoever this guy was, he was definitely of the direct stabbing school of knife fighting, preferring direct strikes with his weight behind his arm, instead of fancy body maneuvering to get into place. "Eh, she'd heal," the thug replied, continuing to try and score a hit on Cora, who continually dodged and batted the blade-wielding arm aside. During one pass, she blocked a downward strike with her forearm, and while the man struggled to force his way past, she drove her free fist into his gut. She could feel things breaking underneath the skin, the displacement of soft tissue, the pressure wave that took out one of his lower ribs as the blow traveled upward. Normally, Cora would expect this sort of injury to take her opponent out of the fight. He had certainly felt it, if the pain lines on his face were any indication. Instead, the thug grinned through his pained grimace, drew back and punched her in the abdomen in return. Instinct and quick reaction saved her from a broken rib or two of her own. With a gasping exhalation, Cora rolled with the blow, staggering back out of the way and barely avoiding another full-powered punch to the side of her head. Even so, the fist managed to clip her, and she had to blink the stars out of her eyes as she tried to regain her breath and focus. The guy was startlingly strong, much stronger than his wiry build suggested. Stronger, come to that, than many a much larger man she'd fought in her time. "What the—" she blurted as she regained her bearings. "You really are new here, lady," the thug said smugly. He ran his free hand through his hair, revealing the second set of furry ears that had been hidden beneath it. Cora blinked. "I'm sorry, what?" she replied, even as she backed up to get some distance to take another approach. "Is that supposed to mean something?" As the thug sputtered, a metallic voice chuckled behind Cora. "Told you she wouldn't be impressed, Carl." She spun on her heel and her eyes widened in shock. Unlike the first knife wielder, who had at least looked human, this one was much taller, thinner, and appeared to be covered in smooth, bony plates over his exposed face, flowing backwards to a flattened, pointed crest behind his head. The knife in his bony, two-taloned hands was nothing to sneeze at either, putting Cora in mind of some fancy ancient metalwork she'd seen in a museum in Ba Sing Se. Further reflection and questions would have to wait, however, as her new assailant immediately moved to attack. Unlike the first knife wielder, this one moved like a bird, all quick jabs and sudden darting movements. He was clearly military trained, Cora realized. It showed in both his positioning and the efficiency of his attacks. Army knife fighting, it appeared, was army knife fighting, no matter what species the army belonged to. Matters didn't improve when the first knife wielder resumed his own efforts at trying to stab the Avatar. This went on for at least a minute longer. As she kept herself away from both attackers' knives, shifting straight into airbending and waterbending forms to best avoid the slashing metal. "Stand still, you slippery little piejack!" exclaimed the plated face assailant. He had narrowly avoided stabbing his compatriot when Cora pulled off a particularly complex twist and flick that was an air nomad specialty. She didn't dignify the remark with a response. She was too busy trying to get into a more advantageous position. She was so into the airbending groove at this point, giving priority to reaction and evasion, that the next thing she did was practically automatic. A sudden compression of the air behind her, felt along her back, heralded what could have been a body rushing toward her. Deciding to take care of two issues at once, Cora slid under her spindly opponent's reach, grabbed him by his flared waist and chest, and flung him up and back, lifting him over her shoulders as she fell backward herself. In the normal course of events, this suplex would have thrown her plated assailant into the attacker she assumed was attempting to ambush her from behind. Instead, as her opponent hit the floor with a painful-sounding crash, a pressure wave, concentrated acoustic energy, crossed the space where her torso had been, all but invisible for somebody who wasn't as well-versed in the airbending arts as Cora was. She wasn't entirely sure what that was, but the effect was definitely evident, as the sonic wave slammed into her other knife-wielding opponent's body right where she had punched him earlier. With a pained cry, the four-eared man clutched at his chest and stomach and staggered back, his furry upper ears flattened back as if he'd heard a particularly unpleasant noise. Capitalizing on his discomfort, and needing to gain more space for herself, Cora twisted herself into a whirling handstand, her legs windmilling outward into the classic airbender hurricane kick. The gusts of wind created by her move finished four ears the rest of the way off, knocked over Plateface, who had been trying to get up again, and did a number on the other bouncers who had been jockeying for position around their little group. They scattered, flung backward by the remaining wind, as she sprang back onto her feet, having earned herself a temporary respite as they recovered. "She's some sort of teak," one of the bouncers blurted out. Taking in the shocked expressions of those assembled, Cora allowed herself a brief smirk as she took several panting breaths, recentering herself. "So," she asked conversationally, "ready to give up yet?" There was a brief moment of befuddlement as the bouncers and other thugs looked among themselves, then at their boss, who hadn't moved a step away from his private booth. Zeus looked at his employees with an annoyed, put-upon expression. He pointed at Cora with his cane. "Well, get her!" Cora's face fell in disappointment. "Guess not," she sighed at the sight of guns being drawn from hidden holsters and aimed at her. "Why doesn't anybody ever just give up? It would save so much time." The next phase of the battle between Korra and the bouncers had a very different flavor. Forced on the defensive by the flying slugs of metal and highly energetic particles of varying types, the Avatar moved as fast as she was able to evade getting pierced or fried. Tables, chairs, and pieces of the wall and floor splintered and cracked as shots failed to make their mark. Absently, she noticed that the two DJs were unconcerned about the chaos erupting around them, and didn't even appear to react as a stray shot pierced one of the speaker units, causing it to short out in a squeal of feedback. While the concept of accelerating a metal slug via combustible propellant through a tube had existed for centuries in Dicho, there had never been any traction toward a culture of firearms in its long history. If anything, the very term was more associated with firebenders in the Fire Nation military than any particular weapon system. Explosive cannons and artillery catapults had been some of the preferred methods of siege warfare and even ship-to-ship combat for centuries. But for personal-level conflict, the abilities of benders or the precision skill of archers and lancers had reigned for as far back as anybody could remember. It had come as a shock that Zipang had a firearms culture, despite their preferred cultural leanings toward the Edo and Meiji periods of ancient Japan. The Zipangi had never abandoned their galactic technological skills, only scaled them back after the settlements became entrenched. With the opening of the Vale to Dicho, these advancements, including guns, made their way to Korra's homeworld. Although they weren't prevalent, they were always a possibility, and the law enforcement communities, especially their bending components, had adapted in response. With her bending now revealed, Korra's options opened up somewhat. The debris caused by the firearms damage provided her with ammunition of her own to propel with sweeping, airbending thrusts. This was augmented by the careful application of air punches to force the gunmen back without hurting them too much. Still, it appeared that at least a third of the staff still standing had a pistol of some kind, so she had to focus more on protecting herself from the shots than she normally would in a running fight. She would feel more comfortable if it was. That would at least give her some distance to break out some of her better defensive counterattacks. The close confines of the club, while eminently suitable for hand-to-hand, were now a serious disadvantage for her. Circling as fast as she could through the seating areas, she carried out a world-class dive and slide that would be the envy of any baseball player back home, taking her down behind the bar counter. Above her, various bottles and pipes were shattered as the gunner's aim shifted to track her, and they released their contents to the floor in front of her. "Okay, I can work with that," Korra mused to herself, and then, with a quick waterbending gesture, she pulled the liquid on the ground up to surround her forearms. On the count of three, she lunged back up, revealing herself to the gunman who had been moving to corner her. Their surprise at her sudden appearance was only compounded when she lashed out with the liquid from her arms, forming a pair of long, narrow water whips. While insufficient to immobilize her attackers entirely, the prehensile tendrils were more than substantial enough for Korra to entwine them around the pistols and yank them out of their owner's hands without them getting off another shot. The Avatar flung the guns away into the depths of the club, then followed up with another sweep that smacked the newly disarmed shooters down hard, sending them all, as well as two others who had been following them, back toward their confused counterparts. Not waiting for them to recover their senses, Korra pulled the water back around her arms as she decamped from behind the bar. More dodging found herself in one of the seating niches, ironically the one containing the Zeus Z3. With the mass of the clear display case blocking most of the shots for the moment, Korra could properly size up the situation and see what else she had to work with. Quick glances through the case confirmed that the few remaining patrons, who had not left when the punching began, had finally decided to exercise their common sense and evacuate when the guns came out. The damage in the club itself had already reached the point where a good portion of the furniture would need to be replaced outright. Once again, her focus was briefly turned toward whatever the display cases were made of. The material was transparent, but seemed to react more like a metal, if the blaster scorch marks and bullet dents and holes were any indication. Cora shook her head and ducked down again as another shot managed to ricochet through the case, somehow narrowly avoiding the computer within. This wasn't helping matters any. If she was going to make any headway now, she needed to take drastic action. She slapped the floor with her hand and felt the concrete underneath jump slightly as it reacted to her attempts to earthbend. This was a basement club, and the building itself was probably of steel skeleton curtain wall construction, given its height. That meant the basement floor wouldn't be structural. As long as she kept far away from any of the load-bearing columns... yeah, that would do it. Her decision made, Cora allowed herself a sly grin before stomping the floor in front of her. Immediately, the concrete beneath the flooring halfway across the club surged upward, throwing the goons who had been standing there up and away. They hit the lighting units and the ceiling with painful-sounding thuds, followed by more of the same as they fell back to the floor. As the remaining thugs reacted to this sudden shift in the battle, she broke cover once again and charged at them. This time, incoming shots were blocked by rapidly raised concrete shields, some of them floating around her body to intercept blaster shots and to be flung out into the fray when opportunity presented itself. Continued use of the water, still sheathing her forearms, added extra punch when she managed to get in close, occasionally even freezing the guns to their owner's hands, making it impossible for them to fire. By this point, nearly every thug who had confronted Cora was either on the floor, just about to end up on the floor, or being supported by one of their less damaged brethren. The dance floor was not doing much better, having been ripped to shreds by the concrete breaking through, thanks to her earthbending. If there was anybody else willing to give her any resistance, it wasn't apparent to her. Even the DJs seemed to think it was over. They let their current track end without queuing up another one, watching inquisitively from their booth to see what would happen next. Flicking off some sweat from her forehead, the Avatar looked up at Zeus, who still hadn't left the vicinity of his private booth. His gaze was flinty, his jaw clenched in frustration. She could almost hear his teeth grinding from where she stood. Cora took a deep breath. But as she was about to speak, the doors to the back hall burst open, admitting a squad of paramilitary types with rather large guns. They immediately spread out and raised their various rifles, drawing down on her. The DJs nodded to each other with evident satisfaction and threw down their most frantic track yet, opening with a thunderous, driving beat. "Oh, come on!" Cora exclaimed, ripping up another concrete shield to retreat behind, as the shots started flying once again. On the upper level, Zeus looked at his watch with annoyance, then back at the lead element of his heavy squad. "Did you get stuck in traffic?" he demanded, his voice slightly shrill with mounting alarm. "It's about time you got here!" He didn't give them a chance to talk back, just began directing them to where they were to go, as if it wasn't obvious enough already. Now Cora was getting annoyed. This evening had gone on much longer than she had originally planned. She wasn't particularly tired, but her frustration level was rapidly rising. And as anybody back home in Dicho could tell you, frustrating and annoying the Avatar was a very inadvisable course of action. The rubble of the club made maneuvering difficult, especially as she wanted to prevent any further damage or risk to the artifacts. Ripping out the entire ceiling above them would also be inadvisable. She flung loose chunks of concrete at the nearest rifleman, no longer particularly caring if the guns, or the arms holding them, were broken in the process. The burliest of the new arrivals stepped to the fore and unslung a bulky, blocky rifle from his back, shouting to any and all colleagues in the vicinity, "Stand clear!" Cora's sharp ears caught the rapidly rising whine of a charging energy weapon. She prepared to deal with more blaster fire, but what emerged from the rifle's muzzle was not a bolt of plasma. To her bending senses, hyperextended as they were in her heightened fighting state, it resembled the acoustic pulse attack she'd dodged earlier, but on a much grander scale. The blast was visible not just to Cora's airbending, but to the naked eye, as an obvious distortion in the air. Moving on pure instinct, she evaded it cleanly. It passed straight through where she had been standing and continued on toward one of the few remaining intact seating groups in Hi-Rez. Which happened, she realized as she whirled to track its path, to be the one she and Gisela had been sitting at the night before. When it struck the back of the booth, the concussion rifle blast blossomed into a supersonic shockwave, ripping the table and seats apart as if a bomb had gone off and leaving twisted debris in its wake. A couple of thugs from an earlier wave had been starting to get to their feet nearby, but the blast wave put them down again. Even more than a dozen paces away, it left Cora with a hollow ringing in her ears. For a few seconds, the frenetic music sounded like it was playing underwater and some distance away. That was uncomfortable and disorienting, but she couldn't let it stop her, not now. Instead, she turned back to see the concussion rifleman readying for another shot. Time seemed to distort along with the audio as she saw the second packet of supercompressed air emerge from the rifle. Smoothly, automatically, she counterstruck with a shockwave of her own. It streaked across the ruined dance floor, drawing a faint crescent of condensation in its wake, and sliced the con rifle blast cleanly in two, a foot or so beyond the weapon's muzzle. The explosion wrecked the rifle as if its wielder had fired it at a wall, the barrel splitting and peeling back like a bananarine rind, and sent the man who had been holding it slamming back against the wall behind him. He slid limply down, utterly uninterested in further conflict. Still in the zone, Cora pivoted, saw another of them drawing a bead with what looked like some kind of shotgun, and decided she had had quite enough of all these people and their toys. Throwing off her metaphorical gloves at last, the Avatar began to unleash short, controlled bursts of firebending, along with the rest of her skills, eager now to put an end to this business. Unknown to Cora, Zeus was having similar thoughts. "Why do I even hire you people?" Zeus muttered, beyond frustrated at the outcome of events. This had dragged on for far too long. At this rate, he'd be lucky if there was even any floor to rebuild the club on. "Well, if you want something done right, do it yourself," he growled, raising his cane and pointing it at Cora from across the club. She was currently trying to use concussive fire shots to knock down two of the more persistent and armored gunmen, and was facing away from him. A targeting reticle appeared in his field of view, and he lined up the shot. At this range, he couldn't miss. With a mental command, a compact explosive round was launched from the miniature barrel hidden within the cane, and it lanced through the air toward the source of all his current frustrations. Reacting on instinct, Cora spun around and swung her leg down, striking the floor with her heel. Another section of the club foundation ripped through the flooring and hinged upward at an acute angle, blocking the shot. Except the flare shot wasn't blocked. It ricocheted instead, deflected up toward the ceiling where it impacted and detonated, triggering one zone of the emergency fire sprinkler system. The cascade of water that followed immediately changed the entire tone and tempo of the fight. Even the DJs felt it. The next track they laid down wasn't as frenetic as the last, though still with a driving beat, and the rap-flavored vocal had a cocksure swagger about it that certainly didn't go with the increasing desperation of Zeus and his thugs. That one sprinkler zone's activation didn't trigger a chain reaction and set off everyone in the club. That sort of thing only happened in particularly overindulgent action movers back home. But the average wet pipe fire sprinkler system in Republic City was designed to release about 30 gallons of water per head per minute. Assuming that the fire codes in New Avalon were comparable, these six would provide an abundance of water for the use of any waterbender worthy of the name. Thus supplied, Cora was once again able to go on the offensive, yanking the water to her, then setting it spinning in a widening ring around her body. The bouncers and thugs, to their credit, did not let up their assault at the sight of this latest unexplained ability. The weapon fire doubled, but the blaster bolts were dissipated by the increasing mass of water, producing only small steam explosions, while the bullets were shoved off course by the whirling fluid and flung back out into the club. Then, redoubling her focus, Cora shaped the ring of water into a spherical dome enclosing her. It would be easy at this point to turn the water into ice, forming an impenetrable barrier around her, but that would do nothing to actually solve her dilemma. Instead, she borrowed a page from the playbook of one of her earliest foes, unleashing a flurry of sweeping jabs toward the rippling inner surface of the dome. What resulted on the outside was a storm of ice shards launched in every direction around her, lancing out toward those people still standing. The gunmen and remaining security staff tried to protect themselves with upraised arms, but the sharp chunks of ice hit as hard as being out in a hailstorm, and made it difficult for them to keep a hold of their weapons. Several of the guards took cover behind the overturned tables or the display cases, trying to avoid the fates of their less protected brethren. "All right, that's a problem," Cora mused, even as she kept up the assault of ice shards. Fortunately, the continued deluge from the sprinklers was rapidly replenishing her ammo, thickening the water dome around her. She caught sight of Zeus across the club through the rippling water, and allowed herself a brief, sharp grin at the gobsmacked expression on his face as one of the ice shards managed to knock the hat right off his head. Before he could respond to that affront, Cora made one final series of gestures, twisting the water from a dome into a circular wall of spinning fluid. The wall of water abruptly surged like a tidal wave across the expanse of the entire club, sweeping the debris and any opponents still standing before it. The wave knocked people off their feet, then slammed them against the display cases, the outer walls, and the few still standing shells of seating booths. The abrupt flood left the dance floor and lower seating areas awash in several inches of water as it finally settled down. Taking several deep breaths, Cora straightened and surveyed the resulting damage. Except for herself and the two DJs, not a single person appeared to be standing at this point. "Over and out," the vocalist declared after one last decisive guitar riff, and silence fell on Hi-Rez. Cora sighed and shoved some of her waterlogged hair out of her eyes. With an offhand gesture, she metal-bent the sprinkler heads closed, cutting off the cascade of water. With the internal rainstorm ended, she took another long look at the remains of the club. While there was little she could do about the furniture damage, and the drink stocks behind the bar were a lost cause, the damage to the floor due to her bending would be easily fixed, and would allow her to take care of the standing water as well. Leaning against one of the upright display cases, to her profound relief it looked like none of the computing artifacts had been damaged during the battle, Cora reached down to pull off one of her boots. She stomped the floor with her bare foot and used a combination of seismic sense and waterbending to determine the location of the nearest low-pressure water line. Twisting her hands upward to open a channel through the concrete deck down to the pipe, she made an impromptu drain in the floor. In a welcome stroke of luck, the pipe turned out to be a storm drain and not a sanitary sewer line. With a set of flowing, pulling gestures, Cora waterbent the remaining water down the drain. This had the added side effect of pulling the unconscious thugs out from wherever they had ended up and depositing them in an agglomeration on the dance floor. "Pro tip, fellas," Cora remarked to the inert heap of muscle as she pulled her boot back on. "Don't ride the Unagi. Not fun." Looking over the pile of security guards and bouncers, Cora noticed that one notable individual was not among them. Glancing over to the side, she could see that Zeus had not been spared the final assault. His formerly white suit was stained with a melange of various beverages, his hair in total disarray. He had fetched up against one of the booth benches, sprawled across it with his limbs at odd angles. Cora shook her head with mild disappointment. Retrieving a non-damaged chair, she dragged it over to the bar counter, dug out a glass and an unbroken bottle of juice. Orange, apparently, and filled the glass to the top. She sat back down with her back to the bar, saluted the two DJs from where she sat, and took a long swig of her juice. It was very tart, like a less sweet version of tanger grape. She considered it for a second, then shied and drained the glass. She sighed again once she finished, looking once more over the ruined club, and muttered, "Now I have to get one of you idiots to wake up."